Today has been a shitstorm of shit. A tornado of shit. I can't take it anymore. I don't know whether to sit down and cry or set something on fire. Castle said he'd brave his way down to the kitchens to see about scrounging up some food for us, and that was the best news I'd heard all day. He also said he'd do his best to placate the soldiers for just a little longer, just long enough for us to figure out exactly what we're going to do next, but I'm not sure how much he can do. It was bad enough when Jay got shot. The hours she spent in the medical wing were stressful for the rest of us, too. I really thought the soldiers would revolt right then. They kept stopping me in the halls, yelling about how they thought she was supposed to be invincible, that this wasn't the plan, that they didn't decide to risk their lives for a regular teenage girl who couldn't take a bullet, and goddammit, she was supposed to be some supernatural phenomenon, something more than human. It took forever to calm them down. But now? I can only imagine how they'll react when they hear what happened at the symposium. It'll be mutiny, most likely. I sigh. Hard.
So you're just going to ignore me?
Nazira is standing inches away from me. I can feel her, hovering. Waiting. I still haven't said anything. Still haven't turned around. It's not that I don't want to talk. I think I might sort of want to talk. Maybe some other day. But right now, I'm out of gas. I'm out of James's jokes. I'm fresh out of fake smiles. Right now, I'm nothing but pain and exhaustion and raw emotion, and I don't have the bandwidth for another serious conversation. I really don't want to do this right now. I'd nearly made my escape, too. I'm right here, right in front of my door. My hand is on the handle. I could just walk away, I think. I could be that kind of guy. A Warner kind of guy. A jackass kind of guy. Just walk away without a word. Too tired. No, thank you. Don't want to talk. Leave me alone. Instead, I slump forward, rest my hands and forehead against the closed bedroom door.
I'm tired, Nazira. I can't believe you're upset with me.
My eyes close. My nose bumps against the wood. I'm not upset with you. I'm half asleep.
You were mad. You were mad at me for having the same ability as you. Weren't you?
I groan.
Weren't you?
She says again, this time angrily. I say nothing.
Unbelievable. That is the most petty, ridiculous, immature...
Yeah, well.
Do you know how hard it was for me to tell you that? Do you have any idea?
I hear her sharp, angry huff.
Will you at least look at me when I'm talking to you?
Can't.
What?
She sounds startled.
What do you mean you can't?
Can't look at you. She hesitates.
Why not?
Too pretty. She laughs, but angrily, like she might punch me in the face.
Kenji, I'm trying to be serious with you. This is important to me. This is the first time in my whole life I've ever shown other people what I can do. It's the first time I've ever interacted with other people like me. Besides,
she says,
I thought we decided we were going to be friends. Maybe that's not a big deal to you, but it's a big deal to me. Because I don't make friends easily. And right now, you're making me doubt my own judgment.
I sigh so hard I nearly hurt myself. I push off the door, stare at the wall. Listen, I say, swallowing hard. I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. There was a minute back there, before you really started talking, when I thought you'd just, like, lied about things. I didn't understand what was happening. I thought maybe you'd set us up. A bunch of stuff seemed too crazy to be a coincidence, but we've been talking for hours now, and I don't feel that way anymore. I'm not mad anymore. I'm sorry. Can I go now?
Of course, she says.
She trails off, like she's confused. And then she touches my arm. No. She doesn't just touch my arm. She takes my arm. She wraps her hand around my bare forearm and tugs, gently. The contact is hot and immediate. Her skin is soft. My brain feels dim, dizzy. "Stop," I say. She drops her hand.
"Why won't you look at me?"
she says. "I already told you why I won't look at you, and you laughed at me." She's quiet for so long I wonder if she's walked away. Finally, she says,
"I thought you were joking."
"Well, I wasn't." More silence. Then,
"Do you always say exactly what you're thinking?"
"Most of the time, yeah." Gently, I bang my head against the door. I don't understand why this girl won't let me wallow in peace.
"What are you thinking right now?"
she asks.
"Jesus Christ."
I look up at the ceiling, hoping for a wormhole or a bolt of lightning or maybe even an alien abduction, anything to get me out of here. This moment, this relentless, exhausting conversation. In the absence of miracles, my frustration spikes. "I'm thinking I want to go to sleep," I say angrily. "I'm thinking I want to be left alone. I'm thinking I've already told you this 1,000 times, and you won't let me go, even though I apologized for hurting your feelings. So I guess what I'm really thinking is, I don't understand what you're doing here. Why do you care so much about what I think?"
"What?" she says, startled. "I don't..."
Finally, I turn around. I feel a little unhinged, like my brain is flooded. There's too much happening. Too much to feel. Grief, fear, exhaustion. Desire. Nazira takes a step back when she sees my face. She's perfect. Perfect everything. Long legs and curves. Her face is insane. Faces shouldn't look like that. Bright, honey-colored eyes and skin like dusk. Her hair is so brown it's nearly black. Thick, heavy, straight. She reminds me of something, of a feeling I don't even know how to describe. And there's something about her that's made me stupid. Drunk, like I could just stare at her and be happy, float forever in this feeling. And then I realize, with a start, that I'm staring at her mouth again. I never mean to, it just happens. She's always touching her mouth, tapping that damn diamond piercing under her lip, and I'm just dumb, my eyes following her every move. She's standing in front of me with her arms crossed, running her thumb absently against the edge of her bottom lip, and I can't stop staring. She startles, suddenly, when she realizes I'm looking, drops her hands to her sides, and blinks at me. I have no idea what she's thinking. "I asked you a question," I say, but this time my voice comes out a little rough, a little too intense. I knew I should have kept my eyes on the wall. Still, she only stares at me. "All right, forget it," I say. "You keep begging me to talk, but the minute I ask you a question, you say nothing. That's just great." I turn away again, reach for the door handle. And then, still facing the door, I say, "You know, I'm aware that I haven't done a good job being smooth about this, and maybe I'll never be that kind of guy. But I don't think you should treat me like this. Like I'm some idiot nothing just because I don't know how to be a douchebag."
"What? Kenji, I don't..."
"Stop," I say, jerking away from her. She keeps touching my arm, touching me like she doesn't even know she's doing it. It's driving me crazy. "Don't do that."
"Don't do what?"
Finally, angrily, I spin around. I'm breathing hard, my chest rising and falling too fast. "Stop messing with me," I say. "You don't know me. You don't know anything about me. You say you want to be my friend, but you talk to me like I'm an idiot. You touch me, constantly, like I'm a child, like you're trying to comfort me, like you have no idea that I'm a grown-ass man who might feel something when you put your hands on me like that." She tries to speak, and I cut her off. "I don't care what you think you know about me, or how stupid you think I am, but right now I'm exhausted, okay? I'm done. So if you want nice Kenji, maybe you should check back in the morning, because right now all I've got is jack shit in the way of pleasantries." Nazira looks frozen. Stunned. She stares at me. her lips slightly parted, and I'm thinking, this is it. This is how I die. She's going to pull out a knife and cut me open, rearrange my organs, put on a puppet show with my intestines. What a way to go. But when she finally speaks, she doesn't sound angry. She sounds a little out of breath. Nervous.
I don't think you're a child, she says.
I have no idea what to say to that. She takes a step forward, presses her hands flat against my torso, and I turn into a statue. Her hands seem to sear into my body, heat pressing between us, even through my shirt. I feel like I might be dreaming. She runs her hands up my chest, and that simple motion feels so good I'm suddenly terrified. I feel magnetized to her, frozen in place, afraid to wake up. What are you doing? I whisper. She's still staring at my chest when she says, again,
I don't think you're a child.
Nazira. She lifts her head to meet my eyes, and a flash of feeling, hot and painful, shoots down my spine.
And I don't think you're stupid, she says.
Wrong. I'm definitely stupid. So stupid.
I can't even think right now.
Okay, I say stupidly. I don't know what to do with my hands. I mean, I know what to do with my hands. I'm just worried that if I touch her, she might laugh and then
probably kill me.
She smiles then. Smile so big, I feel my heart explode, make a mess inside my chest.
So, you're not going to make a move?
She says, still smiling.
I thought you liked me. I thought that's what this whole thing was all about.
Like you? I blink at her. I don't even know you.
Oh,
she says, and her smile disappears. She begins to pull away, and she can't meet my eyes, and then I don't know what comes over me. I grab her hand, open my bedroom door, and lock us both inside. She kisses me first. I have an out-of-body moment, like I can't believe this is actually happening to me. I can't understand what I did to make this possible, because according to my calculations, I messed this up on 100 different levels, and in fact, I was pretty sure she was pissed at me up until, like, 5 minutes ago. And then I tell myself to shut up. Her kiss is soft. Her hands tentative against my chest, but I wrap my arms around her waist and kiss her. Really kiss her. And then somehow we're against the wall, and her hands are around my neck, and she parts her lips for me, sighs in my mouth, and that small sound of pleasure drives me crazy, floods my body with heat and desire so intense I can hardly stand. We break apart, breathing hard, and I stare at her like an idiot, my brain still too numb to figure out exactly how I got here. Then again, who cares how I got here? I kiss her again, and it nearly kills me. She feels so good, so soft, perfect. She's perfect, fits perfectly in my arms, like we were made for this, like we've done this 1,000 times before, and she smells like shampoo, like something sweet. Perfume, maybe, I don't know. Whatever it is, it's in my head now. Killing brain cells. When we break apart, she looks different. Her eyes darker, deeper. She turns away, and when she turns back again, she's smiling at me, and for a second, I think we might both be thinking the same thing. But I'm wrong, of course. So wrong, because I was thinking about how I'm, like, the luckiest guy on the planet, and she... She puts her hand on my chest and says softly,
You're really not my type.
That knocks the wind out of me. I drop my arms from around her waist and take a sudden, uncertain step backward. She cringes, covers her face with both hands.
I don't mean you're not my type,
she shakes her head hard.
I just mean I don't normally, I don't usually do this.
Do what? I say, still wounded.
This,
she says, and gestures between us.
I don't like just go around kissing guys I barely know.
Okay, I frown. Do you want to leave?
No.
Her eyes widen. Then what do you want?
I don't know,
she says, and her eyes go soft again.
I kind of just want to look at you for a minute. I meant what I said about your face,
she says, and smiles.
You have a great face.
I go suddenly weak in the knees. I literally have to sit down. I walk over to my bed and collapse backward, my head hitting the pillow. It feels too good to be horizontal. If there weren't a gorgeous woman in my room right now, I'd be asleep already. Just so you know, this is not a move, I say, mostly to the ceiling. I'm not trying to get you to sleep with me. I just literally had to lie down. Thank you for appreciating my face. I've always thought I had an underappreciated face. She laughs, hard, and sits next to me, teetering on the edge of the bed, near my arm.
You're really not what I was expecting, she says.
I peer at her. What were you expecting?
I don't know.
She shakes her head, smiles at me.
I guess I wasn't expecting to like you so much.
My chest goes tight. Too tight. I force myself to sit up, to meet her eyes.
Come here,
I say. You're too far away. She kicks off her boots and shifts closer, folding her legs up underneath her. She doesn't say a word. Just stares at me. And then, carefully, she touches my face, the line of my jaw. My eyes close, my mind swimming with nonsense. I lean back, rest my head against the wall behind us. I know it doesn't say much for my self-confidence that I'm so surprised this is happening, but I can't help it. I never thought I'd get this lucky.
Kenji,
she says softly. I open my eyes.
I can't be your girlfriend.
I blink, sit up a little. Oh, I say. It hadn't occurred to me until exactly this moment that I might even want something like that, but now that I'm thinking about it, I know that I do. A girlfriend is exactly what I want. I want a relationship. I want something real.
It would never work, you know?
She tilts her head, looks at me like it's obvious, like I know as well as she does why things would never work out between us.
We're not.
She motions between our bodies to indicate something I don't understand.
We're so different, right? Plus, I don't even live here.
Right, I say, but my mouth feels suddenly numb. My whole face feels numb. You don't even live here. And then, just as I'm trying to figure out how to pick up the pieces of my obliterated hopes and dreams, she climbs into my lap. 0 to 60. My body malfunctions, overheats. She presses her face into my cheek and kisses me, softly, just underneath my jaw, and I feel myself melt into the wall, into the air. I don't understand what's happening anymore. She likes me, but she doesn't want to be with me. She's not going to be with me, but she's going to sit on my lap and kiss me into oblivion. Sure. Okay. I let her touch me the way she wants to. Let her put her hands on my body and kiss me wherever, however she wants. She touches me in a proprietary way, like I already belong to her, and I don't mind. I kind of love it. And I let her take the lead for as long as I can bear it. She's pulling up my shirt, running her hands across my bare skin, and telling me how much she likes my body, and I really feel like I can't breathe. I feel too hot, delirious but sharp, aware of this moment in an almost primal way. She helps me pull off my shirt, and then she just looks at me, first at my face, and then at my chest, and she runs her hands across my shoulders, down my arms.
Wow. She says softly. You're so gorgeous.
That's it for me. I pick her up off my lap and lay her down, on her back, and she gasps, stares at me like she's surprised. And then, deep. Her eyes go deep and dark, and she's looking at my mouth, but I decide to kiss her neck, the curve of her shoulder. Nazira, I whisper, hardly recognizing the sound of my own voice. I want you so badly it might kill me. Suddenly someone is banging on my door.
Bro, where the hell did you go?
Ian shouts.
Castle brought dinner up like 10 minutes ago.
I sit up too fast. I nearly pull a muscle. Nazira laughs out loud, and even though she claps a hand over her mouth to muffle the sound, she's not quick enough.
Hello?
Ian again.
Kenji? I'll be right there,
I shout back. I hear him hesitate, his footsteps uncertain. And then he's gone. I drop my head into my hands. Suddenly, everything comes rushing back to me. For a few minutes, this moment with Nazira felt like the whole world, a welcome reprieve from all the war and death and struggle. But now, with a little oxygen in my brain, I feel stupid. I don't know what I was thinking. Juliet might be dead. I get to my feet. I pull my shirt on quickly, careful not to meet her eyes. For some reason, I can't bring myself to look at Nazira. I have no regrets about kissing her. It's just that I also feel suddenly guilty, like I was doing something wrong. Something selfish and inappropriate. I'm sorry, I say. I don't know what got into me. Nazira is tugging on her boots. She looks up, surprised.
What do you mean?
What we just... I sigh, hard. I don't know. I forgot, for a moment, everything we have to do. The fact that Juliet might be out there, somewhere, being tortured to death. Warner might be dead. We'll have to pack up and run. Leave this place behind. God, there's so much happening, and I just... My head was in the wrong place. I'm sorry. Nazira is standing up now. She looks upset.
Why do you keep apologizing to me? Stop apologizing to me.
You're right. I'm sorry. I wince. I mean, you know what I mean. Anyway... We should go.
Kenji.
Listen, you said you didn't want a relationship, right? You didn't want to be my girlfriend. You don't think that this... I mimic what she did earlier, motioning between us. Could ever work? Well then... I take a breath. Run a hand through my hair. This is what not being my girlfriend looks like, okay? There are only a few people in my life who actually care about me, and right now my best friend is probably being murdered by a bunch of psychopaths, and I should be out there... doing something.
I didn't realize you and Warner were so close, she says quietly.
What? I frown. No, I'm talking about Juliet, I say. Ella, whatever. Nazira's eyebrows go high. Anyway, I'm sorry. We should probably just keep this professional, right? You're not looking for anything serious, and I don't know how to have casual relationships anyway. I always end up caring too much, to be honest. So this probably wasn't a good idea.
Oh.
Right? I look at her, hoping, suddenly, that there was something I missed. Something more than the cool distance in her eyes. Didn't you just tell me that we're too different? That you don't even live here? She turns away.
Yes.
And have you changed your mind in the last 30 seconds? About being my girlfriend? She's still staring at the wall when she says,
No.
Pain shoots up my spine, gathers in my chest. Okay then, I say, and nod. Thanks for your honesty. I have to go. She cuts past me, walks out the door.
I'm coming too.
Juliet. I've been sitting in the back of a police car for over an hour. I haven't been able to cry, not yet. And I don't know what I'm waiting for, but I know what I did, and I'm pretty sure I know what happens next. I killed a little boy. I don't know how I did it. I don't know why it happened. I just know that it was me, my hands, me. I did that. Me. I wonder if my parents will show up. Instead, three men in military uniforms march up to my window. One of them flings open the door and aims a machine gun at my chest.
Get out, he barks. Out with your hands up.
My heart is racing, terror propelling me out of the car so fast I stumble, slamming my knee into the ground. I don't need to check to know that I'm bleeding. The pain of the fresh wound is already searing. I bite my lip to keep from crying out, force the tears back. No one helps me up. I want to tell them that I'm only 14, that I don't know a lot about a lot of things, but that I know enough. I've watched TV shows about this sort of thing. I know they can't charge me as an adult. I know that they shouldn't be treating me like this. But then I remember that the world is different now. We have a new government now, one that doesn't care how we used to do things. Maybe none of that matters anymore. My heart beats faster. I'm shoved into the back seat of a black car, and before I know it, I'm deposited somewhere new, somewhere that looks like an ordinary office building. It's tall, steel gray. It seems old and decrepit. Some of its windows are cracked and the whole thing looks sad. But when I walk inside, I'm stunned to discover a blinding, gleaming interior. I look around, taking in the marble floors, the rich carpets and furnishings. The ceilings are high, the architecture modern but elegant. It's all glass and marble and stainless steel. I've never been anywhere so beautiful. And I haven't even had a moment to take it all in before I'm greeted by a thin older man with even thinner brown hair. The soldier flanking me steps back as he steps forward.
Miss Ferrars, he says.
Yes.
You are to come with me.
I hesitate. Who are you? He studies me a moment and then seems to make a decision.
You may call me De La Liu.
Okay, I say, the word disappearing into a whisper. I follow De La Liu into a glass elevator and watch him use a key card to authorize the lift. Once we're in motion, I find the courage to speak. Where am I? I ask. What's happening? His answer comes automatically.
You are in Sector 45 headquarters. You're here to have a meeting with the chief commander and regent of Sector 45.
He doesn't look at me when he speaks, but there's nothing in his tone that feels threatening. So I ask another question. Why? The elevator doors ping as they open. De La Liu finally turns to look at me.
You'll find out in just a moment.
I follow De La Liu down a hall and wait, quietly, outside a door while he knocks. He peeks his head inside when the door opens, announces his presence, and then motions for me to follow him in. When I do, I'm surprised. There's a beautiful man in military uniform, I'm assuming he's the commander, standing in front of a large wooden desk, his arms crossed against his chest. He's staring me straight in the eye, and I'm suddenly so overwhelmed I feel myself blush. I've never seen anyone so handsome before. I look down, embarrassed, and study the laces of my tennis shoes. I'm grateful for my long hair. It serves as a dark, heavy curtain shielding my face from view.
Look at me.
The command is sharp and clear. I look up nervously to meet his eyes. He has thick, dark brown hair, eyes like a storm. He looks at me for so long I feel goosebumps rise along my skin. He won't look away, and I feel more terrified by the moment. This man's eyes are full of anger, darkness. There's something genuinely frightening about him, and my heart begins to hammer.
You're growing up quickly,
he says. I stare at him, confused, but he's still studying my face.
14 years old,
he says quietly.
Such a complicated age for a young girl.
Finally, he sighs, looks away.
It always breaks my heart to break beautiful things.
I don't understand, I say, feeling suddenly ill. He looks up again.
You're aware of what you did today?
I freeze. Words pile up in my throat, die in my mouth.
Yes or no?
He demands. Yes, I say quickly. Yes.
And do you know why you did it? Do you know how you did it?
I shake my head, my eyes filling fast with tears. It was an accident, I whisper. I didn't know. I didn't know that this...
Does anyone else know about your sickness?
No. I stare at him, my eyes wide, even as tears blur my vision. I mean, not really, just my parents. But no one really understands what's wrong with me. I don't even understand.
You mean you didn't plan this? It wasn't your intention to murder the little boy?
No, I cry out, and then clap both hands over my mouth. No, I say quietly now. I was trying to help him. He'd fallen to the floor, and I didn't know. I swear I didn't know.
Liar.
I'm still shaking my head, wiping away tears with shaking hands. It was an accident. I swear I didn't mean to. I didn't. Sir, it's De La Lue, his voice. I didn't realize he was still in the room. I sniff hard, wiping quickly at my face, but my hands are still shaking. I try again to swallow back the tears, to pull myself together. Sir, De La Lue says more firmly, perhaps we should conduct this interview elsewhere.
I don't see why that's necessary.
I don't mean to seem impertinent, sir, but I really feel that you might be better served conducting this interview privately. I dare to turn, to look up at him. And that's when I notice the third person in the room. A boy. My breath catches in my throat with an almost audible gasp. A single tear escapes down my cheek and I brush it away, even as I stare at him. I can't help it. I can't look away. He has the kind of face that I've never seen in real life. He's more handsome than the commander, more beautiful. Still, there's something unnerving about him, something cold and alien about his face that makes him difficult to look at. He's almost too perfect. He has a sharp jawline and sharp cheekbones and a sharp, straight nose. Everything about him reminds me of a blade. His face is pale. His eyes are a stunning clear green, and he has rich golden hair. And he's staring at me, his eyes wide with an emotion I can't decipher. A throat clears. The spell is broken. Heat floods my face and I avert my eyes, mortified I didn't look away sooner. I hear the commander mutter angrily under his breath.
Unbelievable,
he says.
Always the same.
I look up.
Aaron,
he says sharply.
Get out!
The boy, his name must be Aaron, startles. He stares at the commander for a second and then glances at the door, but he doesn't move.
De La Lue, please escort my son from the room, as he seems presently unable to remember how to move his legs.
His son. Wow, that explains the face.
Yes, sir, of course, sir.
Aaron's expression is impossible to read. I catch him looking at me just once more. And when he finds me staring, he frowns. It's not an unkind look. Still, I turn away. He and De La Lue move past me as they exit, and I pretend not to notice when I hear him whisper, "Who is she?" as they walk away. Ella, are you all right? I blink, slowly clearing the webbing of blackness obscuring my vision. Stars explode and fade behind my eyes and I try to stand, the carpet pressing popcorn impressions into my palms, metal digging into my flesh. I'm wearing manacles, glowing cuffs that emit a soft blue light that leeches the life from my skin, makes my own hands seem sinister. The woman at my door is staring at me. She smiles.
Your father and I thought you might be hungry, she says. We made you dinner.
I can't move. My feet seem bolted in place, the pinks and purples of the walls and floors assaulting me from every corner. I'm standing in the middle of the bizarre museum of what was likely my childhood bedroom, staring at what might be my biological mother, and I feel like I might throw up. The lights are suddenly too bright, the voices too loud. Someone walks toward me and the movement feels exaggerated, the footsteps thudding hard and fast in my ears. My vision goes in and out and the walls seem to shake. The floor shifts, tilts backward. I fall hard onto the floor. For a minute, I hear nothing but my heartbeat, loud, so loud, pressing in on me, assaulting me with a cacophony of sound so disturbing I double over, press my face into the carpet, and scream. I'm hysterical, my bones shaking in my skin, and the woman picks me up, wheels me in, and I tear away, still screaming. Where is everyone? I scream. What's happening to me? I scream. Where am I? Where's Warner and Kenji and oh my God, all those people I killed. Vomit inches up my throat, choking me, and I try and fail to suppress the images. The horrible, terrifying images of bodies cleaved open, blood snaking down ridges of poorly torn flesh, and something pierces my mind, something sharp and blinding, and suddenly I'm on my knees, heaving the meager contents of my stomach into a pink basket. I can hardly breathe. My lungs are overworked, my stomach still threatening to betray me, and I'm gasping, my hands shaking hard as I try to stand. I spin around, the room moving more quickly than I do, and I see only flashes of pink, flashes of purple. I sway. Someone catches me again, this time new arms, and the man who calls me his daughter holds me like I'm his child, and he says,
"Honey, you don't have to think about them anymore. You're safe now."
Safe? I rear back, eyes wild. Who are you? The woman takes my hand, squeezes my fingers even as I wrench free from her grip.
"I'm your mother," she says, "and I've decided it's time for you to come home."
What? I grab two fistfuls of her shirt. "Have you done with my friends?" I scream. And then I shake her so hard she actually looks scared for a second. And then I try to pick her up and throw her into the wall, but remember, with a start, that my powers have been cut off, that I have to rely on mere anger and adrenaline, and I turn around, suddenly furious, feeling more certain by the second that I've begun to hallucinate. Hallucinate when, unexpectedly, she slaps me in the face. Hard. I blink, stunned, but managed to stay upright.
"Ella Summers," she says sharply, "you will pull yourself together."
Her eyes flash as she appraises me. What is this ridiculous, dramatic behavior? Worried about your friends? Those people are not your friends. My cheek burns and half my mouth feels numb, but I say, "Yes, yes, they're my She slaps me again. My eyes close, reopen. I feel suddenly dizzy.
"We are your parents,"
she says in a harsh whisper.
"Your father and I have brought you home. You should be grateful."
I taste blood. I reach up, touch my lip. My fingers come away red. "Where's Emmeline?" Blood is pooling in my mouth and I spit it out onto the floor. "Have you kidnapped her, too? Does she know what you've done? That you donated us to the re-establishment, sold our bodies to the world?" A third swift slap. I feel it ring in my skull.
"How dare you?"
My mother's face flushes crimson.
"How dare you? You have no idea what we've built all these years, the sacrifices we made for our future."
"Now, Evie,"
my dad says and places a calming hand on her shoulder,
"everything is going to be okay. Ella just needs a little time to settle in, that's all."
He glances at me.
"Isn't that right, Ella?"
It hits me then, in that moment. Everything. It hits me all at once with a frightening, destabilizing force. I've been kidnapped by a pair of crazy people, and I might never see my friends again. In fact, my friends might be dead. My parents might have killed them. All of them.
The realization is like suffocation. Tears fill my throat, my mouth, my eyes. Where, I say, my chest heaving, is Warner? What did you do to him? Evie's expression goes suddenly murderous.
You and that damn boy. If I have to hear his name one more time,
where's Warner? I'm screaming again. Where is he? Where's Kenji? What did you do with them?
Evie looks suddenly exhausted. She pinches the bridge of her nose between her thumb and index finger. Darling, she says, but she isn't looking at me. She's looking at my father. Will you handle this, please? I have a terrible headache and several urgent phone calls to return.
Of course, my love.
And he pulls a syringe from his pocket and stabs it swiftly into my neck.
Kenji. The common room is really growing on me. I used to walk by all the time and wonder why Warner ever thought we'd need a common room this big. There's tons of seating and a lot of room to spread out, but I always thought it was a waste of space. I secretly wished Warner had used the square footage for our bedrooms. Now I get it. When Nazira and I walk in, 10 minutes late to the impromptu pizza party, everyone is here. Brendan is here. He's sitting in a corner being fussed over by Castle and Aaliyah, and I nearly tackle him. I don't, of course, because it's obvious he's still in recovery, but I'm relieved to find that he looks okay. Mostly he looks wrung out, but he's not wearing a sling or anything, so I'm guessing the girls didn't run into any problems when they were patching him up. That's a great sign. I spot Winston walking across the room, and I catch up to him, clap him on the back. Hey, I say, when he turns around. You okay? He's balancing a couple of paper plates, both of which are already sagging under the weight of too much pizza, and he smiles with his whole face when he says, I hate today. Today is a garbage fire. I hate everything about today except for the fact that Brendan is okay and we have pizza. Other than that, today can go straight to hell. Yeah, I feel that so much. And then, after a pause, I say quietly, So I'm guessing you never had that conversation with Brendan, huh? Winston goes suddenly pink. I said I was waiting for the right time. Does this seem like the right time to you? Good point, I sigh. I guess I was just hoping you had some good news. We could all use some good news right now. Winston shoots me a sympathetic look. No word on Juliet? I shake my head. Feel suddenly sick. Has anyone told you her real name is Ella? I heard, Winston says, raising his eyebrows. That whole story is batshit. Yeah, I say. Today's the worst. Fuck today, Winston says. Don't forget about tomorrow, I say. Tomorrow's going to suck too. What? Why? The paper plates in Winston's hands are going translucent from pizza grease. What's happening tomorrow? Last I heard, we were jumping ship, I say. Running for our lives. I'm assuming it's going to suck. Shit! Winston nearly drops his plates. Seriously? Brendan needs more time to rest. Then, after a beat, where are we going to go? The other side of the continent, apparently, Ian says as he walks over. He hands me a plate of pizza. I murmur a quick thanks and stare at the pizza, wondering whether I'd be able to shove the whole thing in my mouth at once. Probably not. Do you know something we don't? Winston says to Ian, his glasses slipping down the bridge of his nose. Winston tries, unsuccessfully, to shove them back up with his forearm, and Ian steps up to do it for him. I know a lot of things you don't know, Ian says. The first of which is that Kenji was definitely hooking up with Nazira like 5 seconds ago. My mouth nearly falls open before I remember there's food in it. I swallow too quickly and choke. I'm still coughing as I look around, panicking that Nazira might be within earshot. Only when I spot her across the room speaking with Sonya and Sarah do I finally relax. I glare at Ian.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Winston, at least, has the decency to whisper yell when he says,
You were hooking up with Nazira? We were only gone a few hours. I did not hook up with Nazira.
I lie. Ian takes a bite of pizza.
Whatever, bro. No judgment. The world's on fire,
Have some fun.
We didn't...
I sigh, look away.
It wasn't like that. It's not even anything. We were just like...
I make some random gesture with my hand that means exactly nothing. Ian raises his eyebrows. Okay, Winston says, shooting me a look. We'll talk about the Nazira thing later. He turns to Ian. What's happening tomorrow?
We bail, Ian says. Be ready to go at dawn.
Right, I heard that part, Winston says. But where are we going? Ian shrugs.
Castle has the news, he says. That's all I heard. He was waiting for Kenji and Nazira to put their clothes back on before he told everyone the details.
I tilt my head at Ian, threatening him with a single look. Nothing is going on with me and Nazira, I say. Drop it.
All right, he says, picking at his pizza. Makes sense. I mean, she's not even that pretty.
My plate falls out of my hand. Pizza hits the floor. I feel a sudden, unwelcome need to punch Ian in the face.
Are you out of your mind? Not even... She's like the most beautiful woman I've ever seen in my life, and you're out here saying she's not even that pretty? Have you...
See what I'm saying?
Ian cuts me off. He's looking at Winston.
Wow,
Winston says, staring solemnly at the pizza on the ground.
Yeah, Kenji is definitely full of shit.
I drag a hand across my face.
I hate you guys. Anyway,
Ian says,
I heard Castle's news has something to do with Nuria.
My head snaps back up.
Nuria. I nearly forgot. This morning, just before the symposium, the twins told me they'd uncovered something. Something to do with the poison in the bullets Juliet had been shot with that led them back to Nuria. But so much happened today that I never had the chance to follow up. Find out what happened.
Did you hear about that?
Ian asks me, raising an eyebrow.
She sent a message, apparently. That's what the girls are saying.
Yeah, I say, and frown.
I heard.
I honestly have no idea how this might shake out. It's been at least 10 years since the last time Castle saw his daughter, Nuria. Darence and Jabari, his two boys, were murdered by police officers when they refused to let the men into their house without a warrant. This was before the reestablishment took over. Castle wasn't home that day, but Nuria was. She watched it happen. Castle said he felt like he'd lost 3 children that day. Nuria never recovered. Instead, she grew detached, listless. She stopped coming home at normal hours and then, one day, she disappeared. The reestablishment was always picking kids up off the street and shipping them wherever they felt there was a need to fill. Nuria was collected against her will, picked up and packaged for another sector. Castle knew for certain that it happened because the reestablishment sent him a receipt for his child. A fucking receipt. Everyone from Point knew Castle's story. He always made an effort to be honest, to share the hardest, most painful memories from his life so that the rest of us didn't feel like we were suffering alone. Castle thought he'd never see Nuria again. So if she's reaching out now... Just then, Castle catches my eye. He glances at me, then at Nazira. A hint of a smile touches his lips, and then it's gone, his spine straight as he addresses the room. He looks good, I realize. He looks bright, alive like I haven't seen him in years. His locks are pulled back, tied neatly at the base of his neck. His faded blue blazer still fits him perfectly, even after all these years.
I have news, he says.
But I'm pretty sure I know what's coming next. Nuria lives in Sector 241, thousands of miles away, and cross-sector communication is nearly unheard of. Only rebel groups are brave enough to risk sending coded messages across the continent. Ian and Winston know this. I know this. Everyone knows this. Which means Castle is probably here to tell us that Nuria has gone rogue.
Ha!
Like father, like daughter.
Warner. Hi, I say. She turns at the sound of my voice and startles when she sees my face. Her eyes widen, and I feel it right away when her emotions change. She's attracted to me. She's attracted to me, and the revelation makes me happy. I don't know why. It's not new. I learned long ago that lots of people find me attractive. Men, women, especially older women, a phenomenon I still don't understand. But this, it makes me happy. She finds me attractive. Hi, she says, but she won't look at me. I realize she's blushing. I'm surprised. There's something sweet about her. Something gentle and sweet I wasn't really expecting. Are you doing all right? I ask. It's a stupid question. The girl is clearly in an awful position. Right now, she's only in our custody for as long as it takes my father to decide what to do with her. She's currently in a fairly comfortable holding facility here on base, but she'll likely end up in a juvenile detention center. I'm not sure. I've heard my father talk about running more tests on her first. Her parents are apparently hysterical, desperate for us to take her in and deal with her, offer a diagnosis. They think she killed the little boy on purpose. They think their daughter is insane. I think she seems just fine. Better than fine. I can't stop looking at her. My eyes travel her face more than once, studying her features carefully. She seems so familiar to me, like I might have seen her before, maybe in a dream. I'm aware, even as I think it, that my thoughts are ridiculous. But I was drawn down here, magnetized to her by something beyond my control. I know I shouldn't have come. I have no business talking to her, and if my father found me in here, he'd likely murder me. But I've tried for days to forget her face, and I couldn't. I try to sleep at night, and her likeness materializes in the blackness. I needed to see her again. I don't know how to defend it. Finally, she speaks, and I shake free from my reverie. I remind myself that I've asked her a question.
Yes, thank you.
She says, her eyes on the floor.
I'm doing fine.
She's lying. I want her to look up to meet my eyes. She doesn't, and I find it frustrating. Will you look at me? I say. That works well enough. But when she looks me directly in the eye, I feel my heart go suddenly terrifyingly still. A skipped beat. A moment of death. And then... fast. My heart is racing too fast. I've never understood my ability to be so aware of others, but it's often served me well. In most cases, it offers me an advantage. In this case, it's nothing short of overwhelming. Right now, everything is hitting me twice as hard. I feel two sets of emotions, hers and mine, the both of them intertwined. We seem to be feeling the same things at the same time. It's disorienting, so heady I can hardly catch my breath. I feel a surprising desire to touch her. I want...
Why?
She says. I blink. What?
Why do you want me to look at you?
I take a breath, clear my head, consider my options. I could tell the truth. I could tell a lie. I could be evasive, change the subject. Finally, I say... Do I know you? She laughs and looks away.
No,
she says.
Definitely not.
She bites her lip, and I feel her sudden nervousness, hear the spike in her breathing. I draw closer to her almost without realizing it. She looks up at me then, and I realize with a thrill how close we are. There's a palpable heat between our bodies, and her eyes are big and beautiful, blue-green. Like the globe, I think. Like the whole world. She's looking at me, and I feel suddenly off balance.
What's wrong?
She says. I have to step away from her. I don't. I look at her again. Are you sure I don't know you? And she smiles. Smiles at me, and my heart shatters.
Trust me, she says. I'd remember you.
Kenji. Delalue. I can't believe we forgot about Delalue. I thought Castle's news would be about Nuria. I thought he was going to tell us that she reached out to say that she was some fancy resistance leader now, that we'd be welcome to crash at her place for a while. Instead, Castle's news was... Delalue. Homeboy came through. Castle steps aside and allows the lieutenant to enter the room, and even though he seems stiff and out of place, Delalue looks genuinely upset. I feel it, like a punch to the gut, the moment I see his face. Grief. He clears his throat two or three times. When he finally speaks, his voice is steadier than I've ever heard it. I've come to reassure you, he says, in person, that I'll make sure your group remains safe here for as long as I can manage. A pause. I don't know yet exactly what's happening right now, but I know it can't be good. I'm worried it won't end well if you stay, and I'm committed to helping you while you plan your escape. Everyone is quiet. Thank you, I say, breaking the silence. I look around the room when I say, We really appreciate that, but, how much time do we have? Delalue shakes his head. I'm afraid I can't guarantee your safety for more than a week, but I'm hoping a few days' reprieve will give you the necessary time to figure out your next steps, find a safe place to go. In the meantime, I'll provide whatever assistance I can. Okay, Ian says, but he looks skeptical. That's really... generous. Delalue clears his throat again. It must be hard to know whether you should trust me. I understand your concerns, but I fear I've stayed silent for too long, he says, his voice losing its steadiness. And now, with what's happened to Warner and to Miss Ferrars, he stops, his voice breaking on the last word. He looks up, looks me in the eye. I'm sure Warner told none of you that I am his grandfather. My jaw drops open. Actually, drops open. Castle is the only person in the room who doesn't look shocked. You're Warner's grandfather? Adam says, getting to his feet. The terrified look in his eyes breaks my heart. Yes, Delalue says quietly, on his mother's side. He meets Adam's eyes, acknowledging, silently, that he knows. Knows that Adam is Anderson's illegitimate son. That he knows everything. Adam sits back down, relief apparent on his face. I can only imagine what an unhappy life yours must have been, Brendan says. I turn to look at him, surprised to hear his voice. He's been so quiet all this time. But then, of course, Brendan would be compassionate. Even to someone like Delalue, who stepped aside and said nothing while Anderson set the world on fire. But I'm grateful. We're all grateful, Brendan says. For your help today. Delalue manages a smile. It's the least I can do, he says, and turns to go.
Did you know her?
Lily says, her voice sharp.
As Ella?
Delalue freezes in place, still half-turned toward the exit.
Because if you're Warner's grandfather,
Lily says,
and you've been working under Anderson for this long, you must have known her.
Slowly, very slowly, Delalue turns to face us. He seems tense, nervous like I've never seen him. He says nothing, but the answer is written all over his face, the twitch in his hands. Jesus. How long, I say, anger building inside of me. How long did you know her and say nothing?
I don't.
How long, I say, my hand already reaching for the gun tucked in the waistband of my pants. Delalue takes a jerky step backward.
Please, don't. He says, his eyes wild. Please don't ask this of me. I can give you aid. I can provide you with weapons and transportation, anything you need. But I can't. You don't understand.
Coward, Nazira says, standing up.